country. And I got an email he's a good friend of mine who lives in North Dakota, up near the Canadian border. And this is what he said. He said, since early this morning, it's been snowing and it's been falling and it's now nearly waist high and it's not letting up. The temperature is dropping way below zero. The north wind is increasing to near gale force. My wife has done nothing but look through the kitchen window and stare all day. He told me that if it gets much colder, he may have to let her in. All right, that's as funny as I'm getting New Year. So, all right, we can learn an awful lot about the year by looking back. You know, they do top 10 lists and all that sort of stuff, and it's always fun to kind of look at the numbers. And so I figured I'd do a little number crunching again and figure out, according to the numbers, how long was the average Sunday service here in church? How long were you forced to sit and listen to one of us go on and on and on and on? Last year, if you remember, it was 44 minutes and 4 seconds. So turn to your neighbor, prognosticate a guess as to how long it was this year. On the average Sunday, and this is according to the internet, you can go online and look at all of our messages. So we've tallied up the average time. How long were you here? On the average, this is a normal Sundays. When we did something special, I didn't tally those in. So go ahead, venture a guess, anybody? Longer, shorter, plus, minus from last year? Do you think we were longer? We were longer. 44 minutes and 10 seconds. So 6 seconds longer on average. We figured in a dwindling economy, we had to give you more bang for your buck, so we worked a little bit longer. Okay, how about this? Who had the longest message this last year? Hey, now. Well, I've got a couple of rulers to give away for longest and shortest messages here. So a couple of awards to give out today. First of all, the longest message. And I will not have to be paddled this morning because Dan beat me by a minute on February 27th. He was 57 minutes and 34 seconds. So, Dan, here's a reminder for you. Come grab your... All right, now, if Dan was the longest, who was the shortest? Where is John? Come on up and grab your thing. This wasn't even close. It wasn't a slide malfunction or anything. Hey, don't think you're not getting away with keeping this thing. Where are you back there? Just remember this. So this way, during the week, you'll remember to study. So you have a little bit more to share with us. All right. This one is not an award anybody wants to win. But who spent the longest on staff? Who had logged the most days in the hospital? And it wasn't. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even close. So it was Rex. And fittingly, I got a box of Band-Aids for Rex. Rex, where are you? Are you in here? There he is. Oh, you're not coming up for that either. Now, Rex, everybody else just got something useless, but I'm going to give you a box of Band-Aids and a gift certificate for Starbucks. So if you don't like gruesome pictures, don't look at this next one. I'll give you a chance to close your eyes. But when I visited Rex in the hospital, I got to see some of the doctor's handiwork. And he's got a zipper installed now, if you haven't seen that before. So, well, you know, here's the thing. I bring this up because it's fun to have fun and joke about this stuff. But if I had to pick an MVP for the year on our staff, there's lots of good candidates. But I'd give it to Rex just because... Rex has not had an easy life. He's had a lot of challenging years, but I know this year ranks right up with him. And yet Rex fought hard every week, not just to come to Sunday service, but to do all the other responsibilities that he has to fulfill here. And I know it wasn't easy for him, and the pain still continues. This last week he was in the hospital again with a collapsed half lung. So the journey isn't over. Fortunately, he's got a surgery planned for the 20th of this month, so it would be great if you would all remember to pray for him, that that would bring some real relief. Been moved to February. So there's why we're going to keep Rex in the forefront of our prayers here. So let's just take a minute and thank God for Rex. Lord, we are so grateful as a church to have so many people that work hard all year long to help make what we get to do here as a church possible. And certainly a special part of that over the years, and this year especially because of all he's been through, you know, his car accident and all of the stuff that has come along with that. Has been our good friend Rex. And so, Lord, we're going to just ask for healing for his body. We want to ask, Lord, that you give the doctors and nurses wisdom to be able to know how to just help him manage and get through this pain. And, Lord, I would love for the doctors to be able to not move back his surgery, but what a blessing it would be to have it moved up. I know Rex would be available at a moment's notice for it, so... Lord, in the meantime, we ask that our prayers would help sustain him and get him through the challenging days that he's still got to come. Lord, thanks for the example he is to us of what it means to fight and to be faithful to you, even in difficult days. And we're so grateful for Rex and what he means to us, each one of us in this church. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, a close second in terms of MVPs and looking at the numbers would have to be Lori because of what she did this year. I mean, besides all the normal sort of children's ministry things that she did, and we had another great year of Vacation Bible School, obviously, but, you know, Lori put on a fantastic seminar that seems like it was a long time ago, but it was earlier this year. She did a seminar over 2 days for parents, grandparents, anybody who has influence in kids' lives called Generation to Generation, and it took an enormous amount of work, and it was fantastic. And Lori and Janet and her team put that together. She put together some game nights, some movie nights, all sorts of things, sort of above and beyond the regular call of duty of what she normally does here. And it was fantastic. And of course, a huge highlight for us as a church every year is Vacation Bible School. Well, we kicked off the year doing a 12-part series called Reasonable Faith. And what we did is we took a look at some of the questions that people who are skeptics, and so many people in the world that we live in today, you, friends, family, people everywhere you go, they have questions about why should I believe in God? And it's not because they don't ask good questions. And so we addressed some of those questions in this 12-part series. We talked about how can a good God allow suffering? Why would a loving God send people to hell? Is Jesus really the only way to God? We talked about, is Christianity as a belief system, is it too rigid, regulated? Does it compress and make your life too difficult to be creative and have fun and enjoy all that life has to offer? John did a great message talking about the cross, and so many people go, it doesn't make sense, it seems silly, it's foolish, it's immoral that God would do something like that, and John did a great message addressing some of that stuff. Well, in all of these questions that we answered, there was one thing in particular, and what I'm going to do is just kind of walk back through some of the messages this year and just kind of take some small highlights of them. And they're in your bulletin. I put notes. There's no fill-ins, but just notes. So if you want to go back and listen online to the whole message of these, you can go back and find them pretty easily that way. But one of the things that I thought was really profound is in all of the questions that we ask, and one of the things that people regularly wonder is, Why would God allow there to be evil in the world that causes so much pain and suffering? And we talk about, oftentimes, evil as sort of an abstract thing. Dan, on January 16th, did a message called, How Can a Good God Allow Suffering in the World? And the thing that I thought was so profound about this is, as he walked through his points, the first thing he talked about is when we address the problem of evil, and we always think about evil being an abstract thing out there that affects us, but you know what Dan did? He went and just made it personal and said, you know what? If you don't like evil in the world and the fallout and the consequences from it, there is one place to start. Look at your own life. Just go back and figure out where are you contributing to the mess that makes this world so painful. And we can't do it. There's little that we can do about so much of the pain that is in the world. But we can be aware of the pain that we cause other people and the evil, the destruction that we do, and do our best to cope with that. Along with this, a message that John did on March 27th called The Difference Between Religion and Gospel. And the way he defined this was religion is about how people think that via their good works, all of the good things that they do, they somehow earn God's favor, versus what the Bible sort of teaches us, which is we come into God's presence not because of anything we do. It's not something we earn, but it's something that the gospel, the good news, is about God's grace. And John reminded us that that grace, that good news, affects us at the deepest levels of life. And I love what he said in here. He made this point that because we enter into the presence of God, not because of anything we've earned, he said, religion and the gospel also differ in how we treat others. We can't look down at other people because somehow we're better than others. The gospel doesn't teach us that. The gospel teaches us we're all in the same mess, but it's only because of God's grace. And so even if people don't share our same beliefs, because we've been recipients of God's grace, it's incumbent upon us to do what? Be gracious with other people. And I thought that was such a good insight that he had. Another message that we did on February 13th, I did a message, and it was called, Is Jesus Really the Only Way to God? And I told this story about this guy. I had read a book earlier in the year, at the very beginning of the year, called Path Between Seas, and it was a story about the building of the Panama Canal. And I talked about Ferdinand de Lesseps, who was a French engineer. And he did a project that everybody thought was impossible. He built the Suez Canal in the late 1800s. And nobody thought it was possible, but he believed it could be done and built that thing. And after he was done with that, he took on another seemingly impossible project. He said, well, we will... Is that your cell phone, Dan?
Nope.
You know, we've got a note right here that says, kids, dismiss the kids and cell phones and check your zipper. Is that your cell phone? Anyway, so, you know, he really believed that it was possible to build another canal, equally probably had even more challenges in the Panama Canal. Well, it failed, and failed miserably. And it wasn't because he didn't believe it was possible. In fact, his belief and his sincerity, so many people in France bought stock options that when it failed, literally hundreds, 800,000 or more people lost everything they had. And not just that, the French government, because of the scandal of it, toppled. And so even though people can be really sincere in what they believe, if you're wrong, no matter how deeply those beliefs are held, there are consequences sometimes. So sincerity is not enough to get us to God. As we find out that there are consequences attached to when we hold things deeply that we think are truths that aren't. There are consequences sometimes that come along with those things. Well, this series also led to something that was a funny and sort of frustrating thing in our office that happens from time to time. I got an email from Dan. And so Dan was doing a message called, Can God Be Known? And Dan sends me an email that said, you know, it's a real simple email. It just said a slide. He wanted a slide with the singers on it saying, we hold these truths to be self-evident, da 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 da. So I thought, okay, well, I can do that for you. So I put together what I thought was a beautiful slide of the singers. And I picked out these singers. And I thought, man, you can't get a better cross section of singers. I'm not sure what it had to do with We Hold These Truths, but Dan knew what he was doing for the message, so I'm going to let Dan do his thing. Well, I give it to Dan, and he says, that's not what I asked for. And I said, I showed him the email. This is what the email said. And it's so funny, because if you just take two little letters and you switch them around, you go from singers to signers. And I should have got that with the singers. And he knew I had all these pictures of the founders, so he knew what he was looking for. So this ended up being the end product of that. And, you know, part of this is, you know, the reality of what happens when you work with the deaf, being me, and the dumb, being Dan. We get things like this. Happen all the time. And you threw your ruler, so the next thing you got to throw is something valuable, like your cell phone. I'll auction it off. All right, well, besides the things that we cover here in church, there were also some big events that sort of shaped the world as we know it. And one of those things was, you know, the world was characterized by protests. And the big one that really sort of got attention everywhere was in January 25th in Egypt. and Hosni Mubarak, just I think it was 18 days after the protests started, had to step down. And he was, you know, one of the most, had probably the most stable government in the Middle East, and certainly one of, had proven to be one of our best friends for so long. And but there was enough corruption in the politics and abuse of public trust there that he had to go. Well, he wasn't the only casualty of this, and these protests expanded far beyond this, obviously, you know, even into our own town. And I think that at the base of this, you know, this frustration that so many people feel around the world, even us in America today, is that we're tired of people and politicians and people in business abusing the positions that they've been given and the trust that we've granted them. And there is greed, and we're sick of it, and people want change. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. One of the things I do found that came along with that, though, is I think that one of the things you see in any time we get really frustrated to the core, whatever it is, whether it's about politics or relationships or whatever, it's a sign to us, a reminder to us that if we have lost something or been violated in some way, it sort of points to the things that we hold most dear in life. And when those things are threatened or taken away, we get angry about them. And I think one of the things that all of these protests reminded of us is that sometimes I think we put too much of our hope or our happiness or our security in external things that may or may not be able to deliver. Look, as Christians, the issue of social justice and making a more just and fair world is at the core of what Christ is all about, and we should do everything we can to make the world more just. But you know what? Here's the thing that these protests remind me of. Our greatest hope in the world for ourselves, for our country, for our family and friends, is not in who we elect or what laws are passed or whether or not our employer is greedy or not. A great hope in the world is the power of Jesus Christ, what happens when he comes into our lives and people commit themselves to him as Lord and Savior. And that's what's got to be at the core of who we are and what we hold most dear in our lives. Well, along with this, you probably remember in Japan on March 12th, there was a big earthquake followed by all of the tsunami, and incredible, at least 15,000 people were dead. All these people missing nationwide. More than a million people were displaced. 3 million people were displaced from three different metropolitan areas as a result of the tsunami. Just unbelievable damage. And when we see these pictures, there's just no doubt when we see the suffering and devastation of stuff like this, our heart goes out. And we want to do something about it. In fact, many people, if they had the economic means and the ability, would go and help in situations like this. And there's probably not a person in here that saw these pictures that didn't want to do something about it. What's interesting is I took this picture because going back 2 years ago, we talked about the earthquake in Haiti. And there was something really interesting that happened in both of those situations. And that is that although probably most of you didn't have the opportunity to go and do something about it, you may have sent money via relief or whatever. You know, here is the phenomenal thing I think about being part of a church is what we do here on Sundays and the work that happens during the week here and the money that you contribute all goes to helping do the things that we do. And one of the things that we forget about is we've got, I think almost 30 different missionaries around the world that are working hard on Jesus' behalf. And we have the Shaws who are working in Asia. And Marty grew up in Japan. And he and Denise are working with a couple of churches in Japan. Well, in fact, one of them less than 20 kilometers away from one of those major metropolitan areas. The thing I love about this is the reminder for us that when we put money in the basket every Sunday when it comes around and goes by you, it's not just to pay for the lights and the salaries of the people that do what happens to keep things going here, but you are doing something that makes a difference on God's behalf all around the world and in places where we really want to be involved, whether it was in Haiti last year via the missionaries that we had there on the ground. We have a direct impact via people that we know and trust in these places, and that's one of the phenomenal things that happens. And just talking about our offering and what happens here, you know, we went into this month, we went into December, about $40,000 or more shy of what we needed at the beginning of the month. We were already $40,000 shy in the hole. And, you know, because of your faithfulness, so many of you in here, all through the year, and especially this last month, we're going to finish this last year, 2011, probably slightly ahead of budget. Thank you, guys. I say all that because our budget is about making a difference literally all over the world. And so thank you for your faithfulness. Well, we did a series in Easter called He's Alive, and we talked all about Jesus' mission and what his focus was and where he was going, and he knew what he was doing. And there was a message that we did called Great Expectations. And we talked about how Jesus traveled along the roads, how he, via his miracles and his teachings, people had these expectations. Whoa, is this the Messiah? Is this the guy that God's promised that's going to bring deliverance to our country and to our nation that we've looked forward to for so long? And Jesus did amazing things, and he really shook up. Talk about protest. Talk about stirring up the ruling class. Whoa. I talked about how I made a joke about how, you know, if there was a National Enquirer back there, how Jesus would have been on the cover for sure. You know, everybody would have wondered who he is, and all of the gossip would have been all about him and what he was doing and what was going on at the time. But this was all to make a point about how people have expectations, and people back then had expectations of Jesus, what he'd do, what he'd bring, what he would achieve. And they came to find out that very few people really understood what Jesus' expectations and life was really all about. And he had a purpose and a mission, and nothing was going to dissuade him from that. And I think it's important in our own lives to remember that very oftentimes, if you're like me, I have expectations of Jesus and of God to do certain things, to bring about certain results. And I have to remember that very oftentimes my expectations are just that. They're mine. And they might not be God's. That's a healthy thing to be reminded of as we walked through that series. All right, well, besides that, whoa, we did some really, I mean, just sort of like not part of the regular scheduled stuff this last year in terms of projects and stuff, the seminars that we put on here. So I don't know how many weeks, Charlie, how many weeks did we do the Truth Project for? It was a lot. It was several. It was for a long time, but we did the Truth Project. And the married couples, many people, I don't know if you remember this, but they put on a seminar for us, a simulcast here, called Love for Life. Lori and her team put together Generation to Generation. The women's ministry had the simulcast with Beth Moore here. And just a couple weeks ago, we had Bill Mills here for that outstanding weekend. You know, above and beyond sort of regular planned things, man, we had some great opportunities this year to gather together and learn and spend time talking about important things in life. We did a series kind of in the middle of the year, a couple weeks, I think it was a seven-week series called Faith in the Family, where we talked about just what the title says there, discovering God's purpose and his plan for his family and for ours. There was a series in here, as I was looking through, there were so many good highlights of this. But I think probably John's message called Keeping Faith in the Family, John had 6 points that I thought really captured so much of what we wanted this series to be about. And he talked about how, you know, you're not just adopted into the family of God. Each person, you can't rest on the faith of your parents. And secondly, he said, you know what? Because individual responsibility, each of us has to give an account for our own lives. We can't blame our parents or even our past for where we are in life. And like this, man, as pastors, so many people, as parents, they look at where their kids end up in life. And they blame themselves when they see their kids making poor choices. And one of the things we know is you can be the best parent in the world. And you know what? Kids still have to make their own choices in life. And by God's grace, the opposite is true also, isn't it? That you can be a rotten parent. And by God's grace, your kids can still turn out to love and honor God. But it's, we can't spend our lives beating ourselves up for the choices our kids make. But you know what? Here's the thing. As parents, man, we shouldn't be complacent even for a second, because our kids are a gift from God, and they deserve our best. And finally, he said, you know what, not just, this isn't just about the family, but because the family is so important, as a church, we have a responsibility to do our best to pass stuff on to future generations. That's why we work so hard with our children and youth ministry stuff to do what we do and want to do better all the time. Dan had a message, and I love the title. He said, take it like a man. And he did that message June 5th this year. The message was really interesting. First of all, he told, if you haven't listened to the message, go back and listen to it, because Dan tells two stories about his boys that are two of the coolest stories I've ever heard in my life. I love them. They make me crack up. But Dan's message in Take It Like a Man was all about humility. So good what he talked about how humility is one of the hardest things for most men to build as an attribute into their life. And part of what happens is anytime our pride gets offended is, guys, we feel like it's our responsibility to defend ourselves. And Dan reminded us, you know what? Humility, it says, you know what? You don't have to do that. Allow God, in his grace, through circumstances, to vindicate you and what you do. Don't spend your life feeling like you have to defend yourself. Do what you need to do to honor God. Don't worry about the consequences. And when other people look down at you, when other people say ill about you or misperceive what you're doing, you don't have to be that person that goes and tries to set everything right all the time. You can allow God to do that stuff. Believe it or not, God's big enough to do that. I put together a lot of videos during the year, and I did a message on Father's Day, the 5 P's. And I think this was probably my favorite video that I've ever put together. It was so easy to do, but it was a blast.
What up? It's Dad. Well, turn off those video games. Listen to this. But there ain't no G in being D-A-D. But don't nobody mow this lawn like me. My minivan's got spinners and a custom grill. It's got 20 million stains where the kids have spilled. I bathe little tights, put training wheels on bikes, living thug life, if it's cool with my wife. I'm balling, snatching up diapers by the cases, and dropping mad cheddar on my kids' new braces. Live like a king, snow like an ox. Sometimes I walk around in just boxes and socks. Buy you ice cream, shorty, when you're feeling down. But test me and I swear I'll turn this car around. Cause I'm a dad, spelled D-A-D. I got mad love for my family. I'm out. Gotta go to the mall. Get some sweatpants.
Oh, it's so fun to do. You know, we sent two teams out to the Navajo Reservation with John, both an adult team and a youth team again this year. And part of what makes that possible is, again, not just, it's above and beyond generosity and offering that helps those trips be pulled off. So thank you guys for your prayers and allowing those guys to be able to go and do the work they're doing. I don't know if you remember, but John shared this picture about the pastor's house that they worked on. I can't remember which Sunday that was. It was in October, I think towards the end of the month, but you can go online and listen to that message and look at the slides from it. Phenomenal story of a pastor who lived, I think, with 8 people in a house about the size of our lobby in there for 22 years. And they were able to go and make their house 4 times as big. Just an amazing story and really cool thing that's happened over years of going out there and serving together. Our last series that we did, 22 weeks long, it was so much fun for us as pastors to put together. So many highlights in the series. It was interesting because it wasn't just about David, although we talked, obviously, he was the center of the whole thing. But remember, Dan kicked off the series by talking about Hannah and her song. And we learned about so many other important people during that life and times that shaped David and the events of the country then. We talked about Nathan and Joab, Mephibosheth, Saul, obviously. And, of course, the one person that plays such a significant role in the whole story, especially at the very beginning, was Jonathan. And John did a message on July 3rd called Friends. And he talked about this word hesed in the Hebrew, which is it's a word about covenant faithfulness. And it's a covenant based on not convenience, but it was a covenant made between people that said, regardless of how well this works out for me, I'm in this for you and your best interest. And, you know, I loved this message and going through this, and then I got to do the king's table where we sat up front, talked about how David was gracious with Mephibosheth, and how it's a picture of God's covenant faithfulness for us that isn't based on God's convenience. It wasn't based on what God could get out of it. God's grace and his love is based on his grace and his love. And so often in our own lives, and I know this is true for me, it was like an arrow through my heart, that so many of my relationships, even with my own wife oftentimes, is really based on convenience and an economic exchange. That is, I'll do something for you as long as there's going to be some sort of payback in some way. And that's not how God treats us. And my life doesn't have a whole lot of these chesed-based relationships, which is just purely on wanting the best for other people and the best for others' welfare. And I thought John did a fantastic job walking through that relationship. And when we did the King's Table, I used this quote from Charles Swindoll, on September 25th. It said, "We refer to a ballet dancer as having grace. We say grace at meals. We talk about the Queen of England bringing grace to events that she attends. Grace can mean coordination or movement. It can mean prayer. It can refer to dignity and elegance. Most importantly, grace can mean unmerited, undeserved favor. Extending special favor to someone who doesn't deserve it, hasn't earned it, and can't repay it." David certainly comes to find out that's true in his own life about what God had done for him. And it was such a good reminder as we went through those early weeks of David's life that we are all recipients of God's grace and how powerful that is and how it shaped David's life and how that good news can shape our lives too. Well, I don't know what this says about us as a church, but one of the theologians that we drew on again this year like we did last year was Forrest Gump, and this is the Forrest topic.
No shrimp.
Where the hell's this god of yours?
It's funny Lieutenant Dan said that, because right then, God showed up. I was scared, but Lieutenant Dan, he was mad.
You call this a storm? It's time for a showdown. You and me, I'm right here. Come and get me.
And let me tell you something about Lieutenant Dan. He never actually said so, but I think he made his peace with God.
I played this clip when we did this message about how David loses his son, and God tells him in advance that his son is going to die, that he had an adulterous affair with Bathsheba. And one of the things I talked about is, you know, so many people in grief in life go through experiences where because of that grief, they scream and yell at God. And I talked about how comforting it is to know that David was like that in life. If you don't believe me, you can go read Psalm 39. That's why I played this clip. God is not threatened when we scream and yell at him. David in Psalm 39, it's just 13 verses long. And at the very end, it's, you know, most psalms end at a note, even if it's where God, why God, they end on a note of, you know, but you're faithful. Your promises will live through or see us through. You know what it says at the end of that psalm? It just says, "Look away from me so I can have some peace." David feels the oppression of God in his life so much that he says, "If I'm going to have any peace in my life, go away." It doesn't seem that God's threatened by those moments where we doubt, yell, scream. Like Lieutenant Dan's, I think God's big enough to handle those moments in our life? Well, if there was a moment that I have heard more about during this year than at any other quote, it was something that Dan put together in a message October 30th. And Dan talked all about having alligator skin. And I've had so many people in the last couple of weeks since then ask me about where this was or what the quote was. And Dan was talking about Shimei, and about how he curses David in that whole episode and how David treats the guy with a lot of grace. Could have had him killed, but he didn't. And Dan reminds us that when God's in the story, when God's in our lives, it allows us to have a soft heart and a thick skin. And he reminded us, and this was so good, what are the consequences when we don't, when we just have one to the exclusion of the other? And he said, a thick skin without a soft heart, what does it do? It leads to bitterness. And a soft heart without a thick skin leaves you wounded. I thought those were such good insights. And apparently a lot of you thought so too, because you've asked me about this over time. So we also, you know, every year marks the loss of people in our own families and celebrities and whatnot. And of course, this year we lost everywhere from Elizabeth Taylor on one end of the spectrum to Osama bin Laden on the other. One of the most interesting things was Steve Jobs when he died in October, and reading all of the things that were said about him. And he was he taught us so much about life, I think both good and bad. One of my favorite quotes is when he gave at the commencement address at Stanford, and he said, your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Certainly his life was not trapped by other people's dogma. That's part of why he was able to be so successful, and I think creative in his own life of the gifts that God gave him. I think this is true in my life and so many other people that I know, that whether it's parents' expectations or expectations of husbands or wives or friends or even what we think the church tells us how we ought to live, that we don't really embrace the freedom that we have in Christ to be all that God made us to be, which is unique individuals figuring out how to best use the gifts that God's given, each one of us, and what that looks like, even if we don't see other people doing it, even if it's risky. I love what Paul tells us in Romans 12:1. He says, we ought to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And remember, Paul is just talking to people in a Roman culture where, just like us, people had ideas, concepts, beliefs about what it looked like to live life. And he said, don't be trapped by those things. But as you come to know God and he indwells your life, allow God to shape you into the person he most wants you to be. Well, aside from just death, we also had some new arrivals in our families here. And I think one of my favorite stories of new arrivals, it's a little bit offbeat, it's a little bit different, is the story of, there's a number of families in our church that are involved with foster care and foster adopt. And one of the neat things was, we couldn't really talk about it because legally we're not allowed to, but Russell and Michaela were in the process for over a year of adopting a son. And this year, on September 28th, Ezra officially became part of the Grant family. And we have so many neat reasons to sell. It's good to see. This was a great story, and there are so many other great stories about new arrivals. Well, one of the greatest arrivals that we covered was God's arrival here on earth. We talked about how he didn't make us go there, but he came down to us. John did a message called 8 Words That Changed Everything. And this is just, you know, this was sort of the whole thing when he talked about, you know, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us when he did John 1:14. And we don't fully appreciate what it meant that Jesus, God in body, came down here. Remember, in their culture, you didn't say out loud the name of God. You couldn't, you know, the story of the ark, you couldn't touch God. You had to be separated from him. The Holy of Holies, you know, there was in the temple, there was the outside series of getting closer and closer to God, right? All the way into the Holy of Holies. Only once a year, one person could go in there. There was this picture of major separation between people and God. And so it was so hard for them. If you couldn't write the name of God, say the name of God, there was a separation. How hard would it have been for them to get their minds around? God came down here, put clothes on, and walked around with them. And he became vulnerable. He had to be brought up by parents. God did that for us. And that's why that story is just, I mean, there's so many reasons why it's profound and amazing, but that he would become vulnerable and do all this for us. And I thought John did a great job talking about how God did all this so that we could boldly approach him. Well, you talk about dodging a bullet, and we not only dodged it once, but twice. Harold Camping told us that I love the little seal over there, you know, that was on these billboards. The Bible guarantees it. We survived the May one, but he wasn't going to be dissuaded. And there is another date. There we go. And we survived that one too. And he became the butt of so many jokes. And I think for good reason, because even Jesus says, no one knows the hour, not even the Son of Man. So if Jesus doesn't know, I'm just thinking there's a good possibility that no one's going to know this stuff. And so he became the butt of so many jokes, and really, I think, gave Christianity such a black eye because of this stuff. But having said that, it's too easy for us in life to assume that we have another day, another month, another year. I read this quote this week that reminded me that from G. Campbell Morgan. He just says, every morning when I awaken, I remind myself that I must be ready to meet God today. How that would change our lives if we really got hold of that, made that our purpose. Well, we covered so much this year, and one of the neat things, I had such a good time this last week and a half looking back over the internet and listening, re-listening to some of these messages, so many good teachings, and I encourage you guys, it's a great resource to have available to maybe think back, each one of you, I'm sure God spoke to you, in an individual way about how he wants to make you more his person this year. And if there's something you read, something you heard, I encourage you to go back and think again about how to get your arms around what that looks like to be the obedient person that God wants you to be before we move forward. There's good lessons to be learned from looking back. Last but not least, there are so many things that happen here at the church during the week and during the year that really make this such a fun place for us to be a part of. And there's so many different things that happen here. It's incredible. But, you know, the thing that we love and the thing that really makes this what it is has really very little to do what happens in these walls. It has to do with your life and your ministry and what God, the stories that we get to hear about what God is doing in you and through you out there in your families, in your workplaces, and where you play. That's what gives us life as staff here, and it's what we look forward to in this coming year too, is hearing how God is alive and at work in you and your life. God bless you guys and have a great week. We're gonna start our new year by continuing our worship with an offering. Thanks for your faithfulness, and we look forward to another great year as God journeys us down this road together. Thanks, guys. God bless you.